Michelle and Bondari, and I am going to be talking to you about a community-based plan to reduce underage alcohol access through media messages. Unfortunately, as things go in the community, our media messages have yet to be launched, so there's no true evaluation, but I'm going to tell you about how we arrived at our, how we plan to evaluate it, and take you through the entire step, because I think from my work in the substance abuse prevention field, my experience has been that many times communities approach things sometimes in a haphazard manner, so I'm excited that they're actually working through some steps to look at where the issues really lie in the community, and so that's what I'm going to present to you today. It's kind of our approach to how we plan to address the issue, and then perhaps next year we'll have some results to present from that. But I should say that the work that I'm presenting here represents the work of many community partners who make up the Buffalo Trace Agency for Substance Abuse Policy. It's a district of five counties in northeastern Kentucky. I serve as a consultant on the project. To give you a little background, in the community, as in probably many communities across the nation, the youth have reported it fairly easy to very easy to access alcohol. And then kind of on the opposite side of that is that adults disapprove of providing alcohol to underage youth, which indicates that there is a favorable environment here to address underage alcohol use. And so the Buffalo Trace ASAP commissioned a plan to launch a planned an extensive media campaign to reduce underage alcohol access to alcohol. So our first step in this was to look at the data. We pulled as many sources as possible to kind of just get a picture of what the current state is pertaining to consequences of alcohol use, because that's what ultimately we all want to prevent here. We wanted to look at what's the current state of use, but more importantly, getting at those drivers of use pertaining to community norms, and we wanted to look at perception of harm, perception of availability, both socially and retail, and looking at the extent to which it was enforced, that the laws were enforced. So we looked at a number of different sources, and I'm only presenting to you a summary of what we found in this. In terms of looking at consequences, the percent of alcohol-related collisions in the Buffalo Trace District was higher than the state rates. The percent of total arrests among juveniles for alcohol-related offenses was higher in the district than in the state. And the most common problems that were reported by students in the district were passing out, not remembering what happened, and then having some type of sexual regret. They did something sexual that they later regretted, and these rates were higher than the state for 10th grade and 12th grade students. So obviously these are things that we ultimately want to prevent and see changes in. In terms of any use in the past month, the trends of prevalence for the past 30 days for 12th grade and 8th grade students are similar to both the national and the state trends. However, there was this interesting cohort of students that that were 10th graders and that we saw similar results when they were 8th graders, that their rates of use were higher than the national and the state level. So we have this interesting cohort of students there that are using more than nationally and locally. And then in terms of perception of harm, for Buffalo Trace, the perception of harm in using alcohol 1 to 2 times is lower than the national level at all grade levels. The perception of harm, this perception of harm decreases as the students get older. So there was a clear need to address perception of harm. In terms of perception of availability, as I said earlier, the majority of students found it fairly or very easy to get alcohol, and while there does seem to be a trend toward perception of availability getting slightly lower, it's still higher than the state levels. And as probably exists in many, the ease of access increases as they get older. So And then the thing that we really started to try to drill into is figuring out where specifically are they getting the alcohol. We want to know in this community, and we had some thoughts about where they might be getting, but where does the data show us that they're getting it? And they were saying the top five places where they used alcohol most frequently were at night with friends and at weekend parties. They used it at home, perhaps when their parents didn't know, and when the parents did, and after school events. But none of the surveys that none of the data sources that we were looking at would tell us who are they getting it from specifically. And so we did an ad hoc survey, if you will, in the district in the five counties. Of the youth, we used we surveyed the same group of students that had completed the survey in 2005, or at least a similar group, the same cohort, and we asked them where specifically who was giving it to them. So you can see that the top three were other adults, friends, older siblings, and an older sibling. So that was the top places where they were getting it. Friend's parent was a little bit on the lower side. And then the adults, but all adults in the community, whether they were a parent or the majority of adults in the community, whether they were a parent or whether they were not a parent, suggested that they agreed or strongly agreed that they would be upset if an adult provided alcohol to teens at their home. I should back up to say that we also decided that we would simultaneously survey adults in the community. The region had done a survey in 2002, but didn't, again, quite have some of the questions that we wanted, and so we asked some more questions to supplement the data that we had. And there were a number of other results that I'm not presenting here that we did ask. In the 2002 survey that was done, in terms of access to alcohol, only 1% of the adults thought that it was okay for adults to offer alcoholic beverages to underage youth, and the majority thought that it was wrong. Yet, the teens are telling us that it's adults that are giving it to them, so there's this obviously a disconnect. 78% thought teens got alcohol from their homes. 87% of the adults thought that adult siblings or friends buy them alcohol, and 82% thought that parents gave alcohol to their teens. So these findings indicate that there is a disconnect between what teens are telling us and the adult perceptions. So while adults say they think it's wrong to supply alcohol to teens, teens tell us that adults are the main supplier. So what this really was, we wanted to bring about is that to let those in the community realize that this is, it is a community and it's a family issue, and that there is a need to target availability from other adults and older siblings. Another indicator that we looked at were compliance checks, and from July 06 to May 07, say about a year of time, there were 24 retailers who were not in compliance. And so that's obviously something that we want to bring about change in as well. So our first step here was the needs assessment, and just to kind of summarize that, adults in the community appear to be ready to address alcohol based on their responses to the surveys, and the survey showed us that the places teens are using alcohol are in the community and a large portion at home, so there is a need to address both social and retail access. Our next step was so we looked at all this data, what are some things we want to bring about change in? And the things that we really wanted to focus, that the group thought they really wanted to focus in on were perception of harm, perception of availability, and enforcement. So these are the issues that the campaign is going to be focusing on. So we want to obviously increase the perception of harm, decrease the perception of availability, and to increase compliance. The next step is to develop messages, and that's where we currently are. We have a prototype, and the staff of the Regional Prevention Center developed templates for the campaign message, and then they shared that with the Buffalo Trace Agency for Substance Abuse Policy to have them review it and get their opinion. So it was kind of a mini focus group, if you will, and they made some changes to the messages there. And then members of the Buffalo Trace ASAP board have volunteered to conduct focus groups. And so I we had a training. I went up and did a focus group training for them where we could come up with standardized procedures for gathering information from the community. We wanted to also ask when we were going to present to them the campaign slogan and some messages. And then we wanted we're going to do that. They're going to do that for a variety of different audiences. And so we wanted to also get their suggestions for where do you think this would best be placed? What would be the best medium? How should we get the message out best? What do you think, as members of this community, how they would best be reached, and you know how many, and so forth? And so the focus group trainings are actually going on probably as we speak. They've done a number of those and should be wrapping up in November. This is a sample of the campaign slogan. It's called "Not Worth the Risk," and the risk obviously being harms or consequences, but also the risk being providing alcohol to underage youth. So we want to get that message across. Some of the sample campaign messages that we're asking if they think these are okay messages or not is something like 65% of underage youth who drink get it from their family or friends, don't gamble with their lives, it's not worth the risk. And then something like invitations, $15, party favors, $30, alcohol, $40, a $500 fine and one year imprisonment, and or 1 year imprisonment, it's not worth the risk. And so just to kind of repeat this message that it's not worth the risk to provide alcohol to underage youth. Some of the targets for campaign messages will be a variety. They're going to target vendors, law enforcement community, the faith community, parents and adults, and youth. I think a large portion, again, will be we're wanting to really target the youth, the parents and adults in the community. So this is kind of our project timeline. We've completed our needs assessment. We've selected our baseline indicators. The message development and gathering stakeholder opinion is currently ongoing. Our target is to have that finished by the end of this month and then begin to roll out the campaign in December, run it for a year, and to conduct a mid-cycle evaluation sometime in the spring. And part of that mid-cycle evaluation will be to see if they recognize the campaign, if they've seen the campaign, and how many times have they seen it, maybe the places they've seen it, and their perception of the campaign's effectiveness. And these are just some of the references, the different sources that I use in gathering our data. Thank you.
So we have about 9 to 10 minutes for questions of either the panel as a whole or individual panelists. Are there any questions? Speak up. Let me see if I can repeat so that everybody can hear. So what you're asking is, has there been any research at looking at alcohol taxes as a mitigating factor? To mitigate the harmful effects caused by the industry.
Do you mean in terms of reducing consumption? Or?
Well, it would have obviously the effect of reducing consumption, but I think really putting the bill.
Right. So, Well, definitely in terms of reducing consumption, and we've done the analysis on alcopop specifically to show if you increase the tax or increase the price, and because of what's called elasticity, I've learned from my resident economist. And if you ever think about hiring an economist, I highly recommend it. You need someone to do that hard number crunching. That's definitely there. But to answer the other part of your question, we actually are also looking at how to insert a dialogue around increasing taxes into the debate around healthcare in this country. So we're undergoing right now a comprehensive analysis of the cost of alcohol problems in California. It's not been done, which is pretty mind-boggling, and the numbers are going to be staggering. It's not just underage, overall costs of alcohol problems in California. And what we want to do is then do some analysis to say, okay, well, if we increase the tax, obviously how will that reduce consumption, but also how can we use those tax dollars to apply to reducing the harm from alcohol, but even in another way to apply to, you know, cleaning up the mess, basically to help pay for the harm caused by alcohol problems, and indirectly, because what we're really going to do is talk about how we can help cover the cost of health care. So I think there's different ways you can slice it, and I don't know how much of, I haven't heard of the application to health care insurance per se, but certainly people have looked at you know, mitigating the harm due to alcohol problems.
Former governor of Puerto Rico raised the taxes on alcohol to pay for the health care. It was alcohol, tobacco, and SUV vehicles to cover the uninsured in Puerto Rico.
Could I say something about
that? Sure.
The best available source to you right now on tax effects is Bill Cook has a new book called Paying the Tab from Princeton University Press. He's done a lot of the research himself, but he's synthesized other people's research. It's clear, this is just not even controversial anymore, and obviously many of the current plans for universal health care are already talking about using taxes. I think the Edwards plan does that, and others are doing it. So that's an important joining of the two issues. Something that people here might keep in mind, when we raised the drinking age from 18 to 21, we could have done something else. We could have raised taxes on alcohol and not all that much and achieved the same effect without condemning people 18 to 21 to not be able to drink but to be able to bear arms in Iraq or some other dark place. So that's, I just got that in there. Taxes are my favorite way to address this problem.
Bob, he said he can't hear you real clear, Bob.
But
he
Bob
said that
is,
you challenged the debate, an alcohol industry debater in Minnesota, and you called him a Flat Earth Society member.
I had a lot of fun in those days.
We all did, Dan.
I think for the very reason we know what's happening at the industry level, we have gone beneath the radar screen with local communities. One by one, we're trying to address problems. This is a national, international industry. They're framing the debate for us. And unless we find a way, much as with tobacco, to change the way we all think about this, we will still be at the same place I was when my first conversation where the light went on in my head, my next door neighbor when I lived in Chapel Hill, he said, what do you work on? And I said, well, I work on alcohol problems. Someday I'm going to write a book about this. And I really want to talk about what the industry does here. And he says, you know, I never think of it as an industry. I think that's still true. I think an awful lot of people think of alcohol problems still in terms of parents, kids, college, what have you, they do not think of it as an industry. They do think of problems on the highway as a problem partly shared by the industry. That's the biggest challenge this field has to face. And it's partly a challenge because we don't have a regulatory apparatus in place, maybe we never will, that helps change the paradigm for that. Thanks for asking that question, Bob.
Last year, APHA passed an alcohol framework policy calling on WHO and the world, all the trade offices of the world to set up an alcohol framework convention similar to the tobacco framework convention. So if you haven't looked at that policy, you can get that online here at APHA. Yes, ma'am. So what she said is that the surveys show that adults support the tax. It's the most popular. If you're going to have a tax, it's the most popular tax. What are some of the messages they might think about using in that campaign? Lots of money.
Well, I think one of the best arguments for raising the alcohol tax is that it hasn't been done in decades. I mean, I imagine in Arizona like in any other state. And there you can do some mathematical, simple math to show, you know, just based on inflation, how taxes have gone down. And there's actually a good federal chart that shows that I've seen. So, I mean, just that argument alone. And then, of course, the connection to underage drinking, you know, to show that, that's the best strategy for reducing underage drinking. I think those two are, but others may have a...
Just the other way is get the cost of milk, the cost of bottled water, and the cost of alcohol. You'll find out that alcohol is the cheapest product.
To focus on this, you constantly have to remember that a big fraction of the cost of alcohol products is taxed. Beer is the big exception, but the rest of them, taxes is just a huge portion of that. And as long as it doesn't keep up, the tax doesn't keep up, alcohol gets cheaper. So time is on their side, and they know it. It's a very, very sophisticated industry. I just would put on my bumper sticker, alcohol taxes save lives. I think if we can get a lot of people to put that up, I think parents believe it. And in the 70s, I know that's a long time ago, but I would talk to people in the South. The Baptist ministers, I would say, alcohol taxes will prevent people from drinking too much. And they would go like this. And the liberals in the audience, I had a beard in that time, so they thought the Baptist ministers shook their head slowly. The liberals say, no, 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 no. Taxes, people will crawl through concrete to get a drug. They will not pay any attention to taxes. All of this nonsense. Taxes are wonderful for tobacco and alcohol. They're wonderful policy instruments. They raise a lot of money, and they can be used for a very important purpose to help finance national health care reform.
It's also not really a tax on the consumer. It's a tax on the industry. To get them to pay for the mess that they create in the community, it's the industry's fault that they pass it on to the consumer.
Just so you understand, right now in the beer industry, there's a shortage of hops to make beer, so the price of beer is going to go up. They've already said that they have to raise the price of beer to maintain their profit level, so they don't mind passing on raising the prices so that they can keep their profit. So when they do that, I would take advantage of that if you were talking about raising the taxes.
Friday night.
In North Carolina, a couple of years ago, they raised the alcohol tax on beer by about a penny a can. The industry brought it up to 5 cents and then blamed the public health community for the raise. We need to be honest. You counter it with some of the commercials that they showed. You got to really, you know, really get the young people in Texas during Texas Standing Tall when we were doing those works in Texas. The young people at a high school that was for media developed the commercials for their peers and for the parents and ran them in both English and Spanish on local television. They were some of the most effective commercials that we've ever run because they were really from the heart of young people. And so, you know, one of the adults who played an actor in the commercial got confronted by a neighbor because he thought that the guy had actually provided, when he saw the commercial, he thought this guy had actually provided booze to the kids in the neighborhood. That's how effective these, so we really need to partner with young people and let them come up with the ideas.
One place to check out is the teens in Dover, New Hampshire. They have created this phenomenal presentation that they go around, and it talks. It's basically very similar to the truth campaigns around tobacco, but they do it for the alcohol industry. And I think it's like the eight truths that the alcohol industry doesn't tell you, or something like that. And it gets at, it's a little bit of counter messaging, and it's not attacking the parents, saying, parents, you need to change your behavior. You need to talk to your kids about alcohol. Kids, you shouldn't be drinking. It's putting it back on the industry and revealing what is wrong with the industry. So I encourage you to check that out as a resource. But I also sort of just wonder about, you know, regular TV programming, what I see at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, drinking, 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 drinking. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night is not inappropriate for a freshman through senior age to be up watching TV. So I wonder about integrating those messages and changing some of, you know, the marketing that happens there.